profitable venture. Isfahan is no different. With smart investment, saving history can become a sustainable business. When discussing Isfahan's future, Mr. Karamzadeh stressed that the province's greatest opportunities no longer lie in heavy industry, but in areas that both honor heritage and safeguard the environment.
Another area of development is roadside service complexes. Isfahan is one of Iran's main transport crossroads, so facilities along highways are in high demand. Beyond the 110 investment packages I mentioned, we have identified another 60 to 70 opportunities, specifically in this sector. We firmly believe that the province no longer needs to expand heavy industry. Isfahan is already industrialized enough, and further growth in this direction would harm the environment and water resources. Instead, we must pivot toward tourism and clean industries, sectors that protect the environment, conserve natural resources, and require far less water. Tourism in particular is not water intensive, and it can gradually replace some of the province's water-hungry industries. Our hope is to make tourism the leading sector in Isfahan's economy.
Here along Chahar Bagh, where plane trees cast their shadows and centuries-old buildings line the way, Isfahan's story unfolds with every step. Wherever your journey begins, let it bring you here to walk these boulevards, share in its flavors, meet its people, and see for yourself why Isfahan is called half of the world. For the traveler, Isfahan is a place to marvel. For the investor, it is a place to act. Few cities combine heritage this rich with a market this open. With millions already coming each year and global recognition growing, the moment to shape Isfahan's tourism future is now. Isfahan, half the world and a whole opportunity.
Despite negative portrayals in some foreign media, Iran is in fact one of the fastest countries for foreign investment. The Islamic Republic offers strong guarantees that are hard to find elsewhere. In addition, Iran is rich in human capital, highly educated professionals, united by a shared culture and strong traditions, working together. Perhaps the strongest assurance is that the country's highest leadership explicitly prioritizes investment and production. When the leader of the revolution designates investment and production as the national theme of the year, it becomes a guiding policy for all institutions. This level of political commitment offers unparalleled confidence to investors.
Thank you for joining us on this journey. Until next time, take care.
Thank you. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints. The birthday of Muhammad, peace be upon him and his progeny, marks the greatest celebration in history, 2016. Imam Khamenei. After the passage of 3 years or more in the first phase of Bi'tha, the Holy Prophet ﷺ had managed to convert 30 or 40 people to Islam through his covert call to Islam. These 30 or 40 people tolerated all those hardships and increased in number on a daily basis. Each day, they were witness to what they did to Ammar and Bilal. They were witness to the torturing and martyrdom of Sumayya and Yasir. They were witness to these things, but they still converted to Islam. That is the way righteousness is promoted. The mere rising of the flag in peace and security will not help promote righteousness. Righteousness will be promoted only when there is steadfastness and perseverance on the part of righteous people who believe in righteousness. There is a verse in the Quran, chapter 48, verse 29, that says, Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, and those with him are firm against the disbelievers, compassionate among themselves. Muhammadun Rasulullah, والذين معه أشداء مع الكفار رحماء بينهم. The phrase firm against the disbelievers does not mean that Muslims are involved in a constant war with the disbelievers. Rather, it means strength and solidity. Firm means solid here. This solidity may be manifested in a particular manner on the battlefield. It may also be manifested in another way when negotiating with the enemy. Just see how the Prophet ﷺ talked to his enemies when it was necessary to do so. His plans were the embodiment of solidity, without any flaws. In the Battle of Ahzab, the Prophet ﷺ entered into negotiations with the enemy, but it was not usual negotiations. The details of these negotiations are recorded in the history. Battles and negotiations were both carried out in a solid manner. Cooperation was also carried out firmly. That is the meaning of the phrase, firm against the disbelievers. The phrase, compassionate among themselves, means that Muslims are lenient with one another. رُحَمَاءُ بَيْنَهُمْ Muslims do not treat each other firmly. It is time for expressing affections when Muslims are together. The resistance at the beginning of Bi'tha resulted in 3 years of unbelievable resistance in Shi'b Abi Talib. They lived in the sizzling sun in a valley near Mecca for 3 years. There were no plants and no water. And this is no joke. The Prophet ﷺ, Abi Talib, Khadija, and all Muslims and their families lived in this valley in the holes of the mountains.
You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I want
travel Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Good night to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio. Greetings from Tehran. Very nice to have you with us. I invite you to listen to some interesting facts about Islam. Islam does not have an ordained clergy or representatives of a church hierarchy in the way that Christianity does. However, every mosque has an imam, or the one who stands in front to prayer and deliver the sermon. Jesus is an important figure in the Holy Quran. Like Christians, Muslims believe in the virginal conception of Jesus by God's Spirit. However, Muslims do not believe Jesus is the Son of God. For Muslims, the concept of the Holy Trinity represents a form of polytheism and the continuation of our schedule on Iran Radio. We start off this hour's programs with Hadith of the Day. The program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them all, along with a brief explanation about the hadith. After that, we have Spotlight, a program which covers the most important events happening in the world today. After that, we have Viewpoints. The program presents an analytical roundtable discussion of various political and social issues of the Islamic world today. And our final program this hour is our varied radio productions feature.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, salam and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Today we ask a question that every soul quietly wonders. What is death? Is it the end? Is it darkness? Or could it be something else entirely? Let's listen to the words of Imam Askari alayhi salam when he was asked about death. He replied, "It is believing in what cannot be." Then he narrates from his forefathers, reaching Imam Sa'd alayhi salam, Imam Sadiq, who said, "The believer, when he dies, is not truly dead. The dead is the disbeliever." So let's unpack this spiritually, psychologically, and even scientifically. In Islamic theology, life doesn't end with the last breath. Death is a passage, not a vanishing. The body rests, but the soul awakens into a more refined realm. The Imam alayhi salam's words shake the common view. Death isn't the real death. Disconnection from truth, from meaning, from purpose. I repeat, disconnection from truth, from meaning, and from purpose. That is the real death. So we can ask ourselves right now, are we dead or alive? And this isn't just a religious metaphor. Even in our daily lives, those who live without values, vision, or compassion can feel hollow, lost, as if their souls are asleep. They have no soul, they're like zombies. Modern science is beginning to challenge old assumptions about death. For decades, doctors believed that when the heart stops and brain goes quiet, consciousness ends. But recent studies suggest that something far more mysterious. In some recent researches, especially the work led by Dr. Sam Parnia, some patients who were clinically dead, no heartbeat, no brain activity, reported vivid experiences, watching from above, seeing light, feeling calm, and so on. These are not hallucinations. EEG scans have shown brain activity spikes even minutes after clinical death. Could this hint that the mind or soul isn't simply a product of the brain? And zooming out, in physics, matter and energy are never destroyed, they transform. Your body's element will rejoin the cycles of nature, becoming rain, grass, or stardust. So both faith and science whisper the same truth. Death isn't a wall, it's a doorway, not extinction, and it is transition. Anyway, back to the hadith, Imam Hassan alayhi salam, what he's telling us is that faith is life. Just that. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us.
this is a watershed moment in the United States. At least that is what many political analysts are saying about the overall political environment in the country after conservative activist and podcaster Charlie Kirk was killed last week. Now, those on the right are accusing those on the left of declaring war on them, and many on the left are blaming the right for creating a violent and biased environment. There are many unanswered questions regarding Kirk's killing, but what is obvious is that the political divide in the U.S. is not only wide, but many may say it's fatal for the regime. We'll be taking a look at this on this spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist out of Bristol, UK. And William Jones, political analyst out of Leesburg, out of the U.S. Thank you both for being with me. Let's start off with Tony. Your thoughts, Tony. Do you think that this is a watershed moment in the U.S.?
Well, look, his movement was called Turning Point, wasn't it? In fact, it could be that Charlie Kirk himself ends up being the turning point where many people on the Republican right side of U.S. politics start to wake up to, as Charlie was doing, the malign influence of the Israelis that they spend most of their time supporting the last decades on U.S. politics. But I want to, I think, correct you describing Charlie, because he was a Christian leader. He wasn't an activist. He was a leader. He was a leader of thought, a leader of opinion. He wasn't really your standard Republican, so he was part of Trump's MAGA movement. So he was somebody who you could imagine in maybe 10, 15 years' time becoming part of the national leadership. This is, I think, one of the most disturbing things about this assassination, is the fact that Charlie was he was going places. And the other thing is, he was adapting. His ideas were adapting to the facts. So he wasn't rigidly pro-Israel. He has been for many years. But over the last few months, he's been, for example, questioning whether there was a deliberate stand down of the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, the army, on October the 7th, 2023. He's openly saying, I think that that's a question that they've got to answer. He's doing many other things to question Netanyahu's wisdom of the Gaza genocide policy. He started calling it a genocide. He started calling it ethnic cleansing. So he was somebody who was his own man. And of course, we don't like that in the West. We like to have politicians that have one set opinion and stick to it. And by the way, what they the elite in the West really love is a politician like Starmer, who will just read out any script that is put in front of him and doesn't have any set of opinions. Charlie Kirk represented the absolute opposite of that. Someone with a conscience, a committed Christian who kept Christian values. That's the values of Jesus Christ, anti-abortion, all these sorts of things. And he actually debated with people who were supporters of the Church of Satan, saying that, look, you know, abortion is wrong, especially up until very close to the time of birth. It's wrong under any circumstances. And our duty as human beings is to protect these unborn children. We were all once one of them ourselves. These are the sorts of values that Charlie represented. And I think that's why he was assassinated. That's why he was murdered, whether it was an organized assassination or, as we saw, I think possibly with the attempt to kill Trump, there was a climate had been created around this idea that this guy is a fascist, a Nazi, a load of smear campaigns circulated through the mainstream press and on social media that then wound individuals up to think, well, it's going to be a good thing. I'm going to be cool with my mates if I go and kill this so-called fascist. So I think that's really where we are with Charlie, a very, very important assassination that could indeed turn events in the United States to recognize that no, it's no good for the MAGA and the Republican part of, or any of the Americans to be supporting the Israeli genocide.
All right. Well, William, your thoughts on that. And who do you think benefits, if anyone, from the killing of Charlie Kirk?
Well, I don't know that anyone really benefits from it. I do think it is a watershed moment in a much different way than the previous speaker. It's really a watershed moment for the ability of the American republic to continue as a republic. There are a lot of divided opinions today. There's always diversity within the American political body. Nevertheless, things have become, because of internet, because of everything, all kinds of information, misinformation being put out on the social media, that emotions can be revved up to a point that lead to such a violent encounter. And I think people are beginning to understand this now. Everybody, of course, is playing it, you know, in their own way for political reasons. But I think the basic ideas, the basic lessons of that were pointed out by the governor of Utah in a speech that he made when they announced that they had caught the killer, where he appealed to the American people to come together to deal with their differences in the open public forum, to discuss the issues, to lay out the facts, and to do it with a sense of comity and with a sense that that we are living in one nation and have somehow got to work together. That's going to be a difficult task going in because of the intensity of the divergences that have occurred over the last 5 to 10 years in the political arena. But this is the only way that you can avoid chaos going forward. It will be a difficult task, but it's really the future of the American Republic as a democracy in which people themselves have the ability both to express what they feel and what they believe, but also in such a way that they are not becoming targets of another part of the political spectrum, which want to eliminate them physically. And I think we have to begin to, I think most Americans are beginning to think of this in terms of, you know, not so much of vengeance, of getting back at alleged enemies, and as far as we can see, this individual who did the killing, we don't know what he was motivated about. We don't know his view on the issue of Israel. We don't know his view on maybe on the view of LGBT, which was also a part of this. We don't know what his views were, but I think in asserting that this somehow is you know, is a move in a political game, I think that's just not the case. Other people were convinced that it had something to do with the Ukraine war, that the victim had been very outspoken in trying to get the United States to leave Ukraine and to find a resolution of this, and some people don't like that. But I think it's much more complicated, and we have to leave it to the investigators to see what happened. But I think the lessons for Americans now are to find a way in which we can come back to a situation in which we can discuss our differences, in which we can resolve them in a peaceful way to avoid these kind of things from happening in the future.
Okay, well, Tony, how likely is this to affect the overall political environment in the United States?
Yeah, good question, because I think what we're seeing is with this decapitation, these sorts of assassinations, political assassinations, really the entire FBI in the United States, MI5 in Britain, and in other European countries all have their internal security services that are supposed to be there to make sure things like this never happen. They are the political police. They're supposed to be the political police. But I think what we're seeing now with the attempted assassination of Donald Trump last year in July, and this now possibly the suspect they've got, Tyler Robinson, for murdering and assassinating Charlie Kirk. These individuals, I mean, what's happening is this same policy that we've been seeing. In other words, the assassinations of political and military leaders in Russia, political and military leaders in Palestine, in Iran, the destruction of many of the senior individuals, including journalists, etc., in Yemen just last week. The idea that these institutions which keep a country stable, its press, its democratic politics, etc., that they are, it's an open season on these. Yes, absolutely right. This is a chaos agenda. But the thing is, it's we've been used over the last couple of years of seeing the Israelis and others perpetrating this over in the Middle East, and it now looks as if that same mentality is coming back to the United States. I mean, it's a while since we saw high-level political assassination attempts like that of John F. Kennedy in the 1960s, which turns out to have been connected with, actually within the United States, with the FBI, etc. And the main motivation seems to be towards the stopping of the... because Kennedy wanted to stop the Vietnam War, etc., and he wanted Lyndon Johnson in. There is a very interesting documentary by Laurent Guillenot calling, which explains, which calls Israel and the assassination of the Kennedy brothers, which says that Kennedy was trying to stop the Israelis getting.
Basically,
Kennedy
what you're
was
saying.
Trying to stop. This is the connection.
Mm-hmm.
Kennedy was trying to stop the Israelis getting nuclear technology at the time. So what I'm saying is, I do think is. I mean, we've heard from the Grey Zone, for example, that Netanyahu was trying to fund Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk refused the money from Netanyahu because he thought that it was tainted. He was starting to turn away, and it's rather disgusting to see Netanyahu put across Charlie Kirk as some sort of Israeli martyr when actually the opposite is the truth. Charlie Kirk was turning away from his support of Israel completely, Marcia. And so I think, again, the main problem here is we cannot allow, none of our security services can allow this kind of encouragement of young people to go out assassinating in the West. It's extremely destabilizing, and it is part of this chaos agenda. So that's why one of the main messages has got to come out from this is our internal security forces have got to pull their socks up, because there is a chaos agenda out there. There are organizations like the fascist group, the Order of Nine Angles, who are trying to push this, which are still not outlawed in Britain, even though it was invented in Britain. So they need to pull their socks up and make sure these sorts of ways of completely destroying and destabilizing a society, the sort of thing that people like Hezbollah and the Iranian government have having to put out, are kept well out of the rest of the world. It has to be contained, but it looks to me like it's starting to spread.
So Tony, let me just get this right. So when I asked the question, who benefits from the killing of Charlie Kirk, to William, you believe that the Israeli regime benefits from this assassination? Is that what you're saying?
I think quite possibly, because he was a very powerful influencer in the United States. As I said, he was a leader of young people. And so what was clearly going on was he was starting to be very negative towards the Israeli genocide. He's refusing funding from Netanyahu as well, which the Grey Zone has publicised. And it's quite clear he was starting to veer away. He was his own man, and he decided that what Netanyahu was doing was enough. He's even questioning whether the Israeli army was stood down on October the 7th. These sorts of things the Israelis will not want to hear at all from someone who's supposed to be supported and someone who in the past...
All right, stay with me, Tony. Stay with me, Tony. Let me get William back in on this discussion. Stay with me, Tony.
Please.
Stay with me. Let me get William back in on this. Stay with me, Tony. One second. Let me give you a cool time here to William. Stay with me. I know you're very adamant about this, but I mean, William, your thoughts. I mean, there are reports that 1 in 15 Americans now are witnessing or have witnessed mass shootings. First of all, I want to look at this. I mean, what does this mean to the American psyche? And why are we seeing such an increase in polarization in that country?
Well, obviously, there has been really a lack of policy that people feel has benefited the nation over the last 10, 15, maybe 20 years. The American economy, for instance, has gone from bad to worse under the so-called free market ideology that has been practiced over the last few decades. People who 20 years ago, one father of a family could support large families of six or seven children on one job. Today, that is not the case. The shift, everybody knows, between rich and poor. The rich have gotten richer and the poor are poorer. The conditions of life within the United States are abysmal. Even if you compare it with going to Russia today or going to China, even going to China today in particular, you see the differences in, you know, the communication systems, the infrastructure is all going to really to hell in a handbasket, and nobody has had the means of actually changing that, which is partially the reason for an outsider like Donald Trump being elected with popular support from the American population, who realized that we were going in the wrong direction. Now, he has not been able successfully to turn that around, and it's my opinion that he's not going to be able to do that with his present mode of tariff threats either, but it is a possibility of doing something with this with the right policy. But the fact that that has not been done has created this increasing diversity, increasing split between sections of the population that we saw in the last election or in the last three elections, and which we are seeing today on the streets in the rising violence. This is something that I would compare it to the reaction after 9/11, where people were all of a sudden shocked, wondering what is going on here. That can lead to some elements of craziness if people are not thinking rationally. But if they are thinking rationally, what they would do is, as the Utah governor quite clearly stated, and I think this is the feeling of many politicians, even those who are infected with the zeal for their own political lines, they realize that the country somehow has got to come back to some form of normalcy that is away from this wave of violence or threatening your opponents with their lives in the political matters. And I'm hopeful that we will be able to use this tragedy, which everybody has been focused on, even those who were supporters of Charlie Kirk, as well as those who were opponents of Charlie Kirk, they also will be affected. They also know that if this type of violence goes on in the United States, they also can be threatened of, whether they're on the left or on the right. And I think that's what you have to use to try and get a focus, and a lot of this will depend on the attitude of the president and the administration in dealing with this crisis. But the task remains at this point that we have got to get away from this continual, very bitter, very angry, and often very violent rivalry in the country, and try and find common interests in which both parties and people from different points of view can come together for the common good.
All right, well, Tony, yeah, some political experts are saying that in reality the under 40 crowd on both the right and left in the U.S. had been coming together on an increasingly anti-war, pro-Palestine agenda, and that this killing actually benefits those who want to keep the people divided. Your thoughts about that?
Well, I'm not sure what effect the killing will have, but yes, that's quite right. As the atrocities go on and on and on from the land of Palestine, so more and more people are starting to think, when is this going to end? And they're starting to realize that Netanyahu is playing a bit of a game with the world for his own political survival, and that obviously hundreds of thousands of people, it now looks like, you know, it's maybe well be into the hundreds of thousands, are going to die, and certainly millions are suffering immediately in Gaza because of this one man's political career, and the world seems utterly impotent. So these facts, after an amount of time, do finally filter through. But when it comes to the sort of violence that killed Charlie, we have to really point the finger, I think, at the mainstream press and also at the social media. We just had a big racist rally with Tommy Robinson in London this weekend. And who should pop up to encourage him? Elon Musk, the owner of Twitter, what is now Twitter. He calls it X, doesn't he? So he's there egging on the racists, saying, oh, isn't it terrible? He's trying his best to divide the country in Britain. And, of course, he does a similar sort of thing in the United States. So these people are actually looking at profits coming from their organ. Obviously, they would like to use it for influence too. But they make money. The more people use the social media platforms, And so this is why I think they try and create these massive divisions. You get everybody on there and everybody fighting each other. And the more clicks that people do, the more money Mr. Musk will make. And so this is, I mean, they're virtually non-regulated, aren't they? In fact, nobody's even allowed to know about the algorithms that they use. So somebody who's calling for peace, like I do, for example, will find many of their posts, you can't view it. It says this is sensitive content. This is difficult. So what I'm saying is the mass media and the social media have caused this sort of situation where all sorts of rumours, smears can go 10 times around the world, have billions of clicks before the truth gets out.
All right. Well, William, some experts say that the powers that be want to keep the masses divided so people can make sure that the masses never unite and basically turn their attention against the billionaires that, of course, one of them, Tony, was just speaking about. Is this a divide and conquer type of situation, trying to keep the people from being united? And overall, with this environment, where do you think the U.S. is headed?
Well, it's absolutely the case that this is being used, the conflict, the rivalries, the heated debates are always a means of keeping people divided against what is their common interest. And but I think that the ultimate result of this may not be, I don't think, in favor of the country of Israel. Look, Charlie, as the former speaker pointed out, was moving against the genocide in Palestine, talking about it to people who generally consider themselves on the right. And of course, if we look at all the demonstrations that are happening at the universities, these are people who generally are trending toward the left. I wouldn't say that they're all leftist. People who are in the middle of the road are also upset about this whole situation. It's something that we haven't seen since the Second World War, of an entire group of people, entire nation really, being decimated or threatened with decimation by a single power. And I think what may very well happen out of this, to the extent that people do not use this as a cudgel against their political opponents, which maybe even the administration, if they would move in that direction, would be a very bad move. But I think there is a possibility of using this, and even using Charlie's own words on this, to unite those elements who understand, one, that the country is moving in the wrong direction, and two, that what's going on internationally, in the Middle East in particular, in this genocide in Palestine, and also the war in Ukraine, which is also being fomented by those same political elites who realize that the world's population, even in the country, in the NATO countries, are being opposed to this war. They want those people divided in order for the policy to go through. I think there's a possibility that we can use this in a positive way to move forward and bring together.
And on that note, I think both of you, I'm out of time, but I appreciate you, Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist out of Bristol, being with me, and also William Jones, political analyst out of Leesburg, being with us. And thank you for staying with us right here in the spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints with me, Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Sadiq and Brother Alavian are over here to discuss today's questions regarding Islamic unity and wahda. Brother Alavi, assalamu alaikum to you.
Alaikum assalamu rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Sada, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Happy to be with you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your presence over here. So, Islamic unity, a very controversial topic. Do you believe in the concept of divided ummah? I mean, in a one whole holistic look at the Muslim ummah, we have ummahs inside different Islamic lands.
I don't think it's black and white, right? That's one of the, main tools of the enemy.
Okay.
Because unity is a mode of thinking.
Uh-huh.
Do you see in black and white? That's not helpful for unity. You need to understand that there's a spectrum, right? And people fall in different parts of that spectrum, right?
Right.
So you're hopeful that people will move on that spectrum toward the light. But if you just focus on one part of that spectrum and say, this is white, the rest is black, then you're seeing a lot of people in black, and you're not hopeful that they might move to the white side at some point, right? But if you understand that this is a spectrum, I have some understanding, I have some background, I have a specific situation. If I talk to people, if I educate people, if I raise awareness, some people might move to this side. Now, what are these two sides? What is the white side? What is the black side? What is this spectrum? It's the side of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And what is on the other side? Some people might think it's like sinning or, I don't know, shaitan or whatever. I think it's dunya. On the other side of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it's dunya.
All right.
So people of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, people of values, people of depth, and people of surface, people of dunya, people of momentary pleasure. So some people choose this over values, right? Now, can you push people toward the values, toward the long term instead of the short term? This is the way to unity.
It was a very beautiful point that you actually referred to, that indirectly actually. Prophet Nuh, alayhi salam, he was preaching for almost 1,000 years. Almost 950. It's interesting that even some days, up to some days before this hurricane and this flood to happen, he had still hope that some people will join him. Because during all this long time, he was able to actually gather only 20 people in his circle. Right? But he had a still hope. I mean, whenever somebody was talking to him, he said, no, they will come. They will join more. I mean, slowly. So I want to say that the time that we are in is much more brighter than that time that he was actually.
Incredible. If you look at all the prophets, none of them had an ummah. None of them had an ummah. Maybe except Prophet Moses.
But we see different masses in different parts of the world, even in our region. Look, Yemen is from one side, Iraq is from the other side, Iranian from this side. And different, lines of resistance have been formed up until now. Now, I mean, the enemy, the satanic power, is actually seeing itself in sort of a very serious risk and danger. So they are really threatened by this power that, I mean, this group of believers have formed.
What if, defending the rights of people from other country or other ethnicity will damage the unity inside your own country? This is a question. I mean, you defend the rights of the people out of your geographical borders, and now the unity inside your own land is going to be damaged. What about that time? Which one is prioritized? I mean, according to Islam,
the enemy actually is looking at the base and the root of this unity-making system. And it sees it inside, I mean, this country, let's say. And he is targeting that head to be touched and to be targeted.
I didn't get you, Brother Alavi.
Look, I want to say the core of all these unity, the core of all these united masses that have been formed recently is the Islamic Republic of Iran, no doubt. And the enemy is targeting the head of this body to target it, to actually deform the whole system. I mean, to put it to be back to the earlier time.
Isn't it the concept of defending the rights of the oppressed rather than a country or something?
No. Actually, all this unity line has
the
knots
that brings people together, their hearts and souls together, is not
definitely. Look, okay. if you want to see the unity inside this Islamic country, you can actually see different reactions of people to different demonstrations, different actually events that they have inside the country. And you see, I mean, the kind of unity that people have. But if we see that in cases that we talk about disunity inside ourselves, it's due to this hypocrisy that is being made and is being injected by enemy inside us.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want this head of this body that we are talking about that is getting united. They are tugging this head to paralyze it, to actually to remove it from their own way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that they understood the danger. They understood the risk. Now they are working in order to paralyze this, actually, this strong body that has been formed. Look, this unity, look, don't look at it just in our region. I mean, don't look at it from Yemen, Iraq, Iran, and let's say Lebanon and other areas. Now, when you see that even in Europe and even in African countries, do you see the same voices coming up? So it means this unity has already formed, has already been formed and has already been created and is really strong. And they don't even see sort of they don't feel a sort of tranquility even inside home. I mean, they found the danger even inside their home, because every day in and out, I mean, the people are in the streets to defend what? To defend something that Iranians are actually the pioneers of this role.
Okay. And and Sheikh Sadiq, what methods must be taken and strategies must be taken by the Islamic lands in order to be more galvanized in terms of the concept of the Ummah, to be fortified and to come to common grounds? I mean, because when we are talking about the modern world has its own tools and necessities. Now we are talking about economics, now we are talking about the sociocultural backgrounds, we are talking about geographical borders, membership in the international bodies and organizations, okay?
Yeah.
So what strategies must be taken?
So if you look at the big picture, and I'm talking about the biggest picture,
mm-hmm.
of all big pictures, which okay. is the big picture of creation and the creator. All
right.
If you look at that, all you can see is unity. So unity is the base, is the default mode, right? And what creates this unity among people is not part of reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a war between haq and batil. Haq is real. Haq is reality, is the truth.
All right.
And batil is lies, delusions, illusions, right? So you need to understand that this is the main tool of the enemy. This is the main tool of shaitan. This is the main tool of oppressors. They spread lies. And like it's not something that Iran has done as the leader, right? It's something that has emerged from within people. You can see if you look at the Western media, they keep calling Israelis liars.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've understood that this is one of the biggest tools they have. Like you just keep lying and lying and lying about everything. Like
yeah.
your lies are so big. Like we don't understand how you can come on live television and lie to our faces and keep a straight face.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's incredible how they just keep lying, and they don't even aim to convince you. They just want to exhaust you. Right? They just want you to keep defending and defending and defending,
mm-hmm.
until you're exhausted. Right? And they keep lying. They don't want to convince you. They know that they're lying.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to back their lies by anything. They just want to keep lying and control where your energy goes. Instead of actually confronting them, you're just debating them. Right? So if you understand that, like it's a lie machine, right? It's a propaganda machine by the West, by the oppressors, by Shaitan. And what comes as the opponent of the propaganda, it's the truth machine.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you just try to educate yourself and other people, if you try to raise awareness, which is what's happening.
Yes.
They've tried to lie about the Islamic Republic for as long as it's been around,
mm-hmm.
right? And people believe so many lies about the Islamic Republic.
Mm-hmm.
But now they see the missiles, the confrontation between Iran and Israel, and they say maybe we should rethink some of the things that we've been told by the same media that lies about everything. Maybe they've lied about this too,
right?
Right.
And they come to realize the reality. So the main thing that can help people come to unity is reality, because reality is one. If we all understand what reality is, we will become one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the lies, the deceptions that divide us.
All right.
And they use this deception against Shias. Like they say Shias are mushrik. They have
a different Quran.
Yeah, they have a different Quran. They
believe in prophecy of Ali.
Yeah.
Godhood of Ali.
Yeah, sometimes.
In the divinity of Ali.
They pray to the imams. They believe that they're gods. Like all lies.
Misconceptions.
Yeah. And they even try to back this by creating Shias who might believe this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What we call British Shia, like British made Shia. All
right.
Not people who live in Britain, Shia who live there.
Yeah.
But Shia that is handmade. Like made in the UK.
In terms of the philosophy and nurturing.
Exactly.
That's right. Okay, Brother Alavian, we got about 2-3 minutes. Any final remarks?
Yeah, just to have a sort of compliment to point on the explanations of respected Sheikh. We have recently even heard it, repeatedly in the media, that Israeli and American officials have said over and over that Israelis are becoming like the most hated nation in the world these days. So actually it's bugging. And on the other side, this is lie machine that Sheikh was referring to. On the other side, we Iranians, do you think, when the flag of Iran is being in the hands of, demonstrators in London, in Australia, in America, does it mean that, they are Iranian revolutionaries, that they are there? No. This is the truth machine, that which is standing in front of that lie machine. So we see the reaction, the manifestation of this, the battle between the front of right and front of falsehood, and it is showing itself in the world. So we have not actually, at least we were not able to export our flags to other countries.
That's right.
But it is now there.
Now it is being exported.
It has been exported by themselves.
Because it's a message of Allah Subhanahu Wa Taala.
Riduna litunur Allah dafa.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Brother Alavian, Shaykh Sadiq. Unity is a strategic asset that demoralizes and defeats the enemy. And this must be understood more by the people of the Islamic lands who are living under the umbrella of Islam, inshallah. It was very kind of you. Thank you much, dear listeners, also for listening to this episode of Wheel Points with me, Atta, the host of this program. Please, for more information, visit our website, iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Take care.